Greetings, everyone. Are you ready for an accelerated course in higher consciousness? This is how our global village will get ahead of the accelerated rate of change we are now seeing in the world. It won't be with the same consciousness that created the problems we see. It will be with a new consciousness that is now evolving with the angels of our better nature. Welcome to Cosmic Love.
Well, greetings, everyone. This is Christopher Rudy, October 31st, 2015. It's Halloween, and for this Halloween, we have a guest on from New Zealand, Jonathan Gray, and we're going to go into some of the amazing, somewhat spooky, and some weird stuff that he's been doing in this lifetime after many years of research, explorations in 30 countries. All kinds of arcane mysteries, and we'll be going into that. Jonathan, thank you for being with us today on Cosmic Love.
Pleasure to be with you, Christopher.
Jonathan, you've got an amazing story. I've been looking at some of the records, the articles, YouTube videos. You've been doing this 48 years?
Something like that, yes.
It's pretty amazing some of the stuff that you've got. Did you get my email asking you about some of the spooky and weird stuff?
Yes, just a few minutes ago.
Yeah, I figured, you know, it's just kind of a synchronicity here in Halloween, and here I am. I mean, it's pretty amazing in the global village we live in that I can speak with you over Skype there in New Zealand, here from Montana, and. But you've been from the headwaters of the Amazon to deserts around the world to the bottom of the sea in different places. Can you share with us some of the most amazing, weird, spooky things that you've discovered?
Well, I suppose you mentioned the bottom of the sea. It's not a place you usually walk around on.
Yeah.
We've had a team of 30 international divers going several times, quite a few times actually, down especially to a focal point of interest, which is the Red Sea, the Gulf of Aqaba between Egypt and Saudi Arabia. Uh-huh. Very, very interesting discovery there, Christopher.
Was that the one where you discovered chariots where they think the Red Sea might have parted?
Absolutely, and there's no doubt that it parted there. I'll tell you some amazing things there on the seabed. Coming out from Egypt, it's desert country, but then as you get about three quarters of the way across the Sinai Desert, the road turns. You can go straight ahead, which takes you up to the top of the Gulf of Aqaba, or you just do a turn, which takes you into a canyon called the Wadi Wetir. Now, in this canyon, you'll notice that there are a lot of old stones that must have been littering the canyon, and they were all pushed aside into two lines, one each side of the present-day highway, for people to come through without the stones littering their pathway. And these lines continue down to the beach, and then they continue under the sea, the same two straight lines.
Uh-huh.
Now, where they continue, there is an underwater land bridge. And
land bridge.
A sand bridge, yes. And that goes right across a canyon as deep as the Grand Canyon in America.
Really?
An underwater canyon. It's a continuation of the Great African Rift.
Whoa. But there's a land bridge through the middle of it?
Right across the middle of it, yes. And then both sides of the land bridge is about a mile or so wide, and both sides of that, you've got a very steep drop. Now, it goes down hundreds more feet, maybe a thousand, a couple of thousand feet deeper, both sides. And the interesting thing is that the sand bridge begins at the mouth of this canyon on the western side and ends at the mouth of another canyon on the eastern side. On this sand bridge, we have been diving and we found the remains of chariots, chariot cabs, chariot wheels, skeletal parts of horses, skeletal parts of men, all scattered across the seabed, all mixed up together. And the interesting thing about these lines of stones is that whoever did it, they continued the lines under the sea at the time when somebody was about to go across the sand bridge to the other side, because this army that chased them is there on the seabed. And we have a record in the biblical book of Exodus about the Exodus, the slavery at the time of Moses, and it tells us that Pharaoh's army chased after them and caught up with them at the sea, at the Red Sea, which is where this is. And that then the sea opened precisely at the very spot where the sand bridge was. If it had opened further south or further north, it would have been no use to the fugitives. It opened at the precise spot with a wall of water rising up both sides and dry land appearing from one side of the sea, from the Egyptian shore across to the Saudi Arabian shore, which is about 8 miles along.
Eight miles?
Yeah. And well, the interesting yeah. thing is that, yeah, go ahead. You had a question, I'll be happy to answer.
No, I'd say, what was the interesting thing?
The interesting thing is that the canyon drops down at an angle from the shore all along the whole coast at a 45-degree angle steeply to the bottom, very steep into the bottom of the canyon, 45 degrees from the shore. But where the sand bridge is, it's only a gentle 7 degrees. And then it goes across gently and gently goes up the other side. So that the account of the chariot, the covered wagons and so on, which these Israelite slaves had, rings true. You've got first of all, evidence that whoever was, I like to call it his rock group, Moses' rock group. Here he was, a group of men ahead of the fugitives, pushing aside all the rocks into two straight lines, one each side of where they were traveling. And this continued right on under the sea, right across to the Saudi Arabian side, so that they could escape across when the sea opened up. Absolutely amazing. This is good archaeological evidence of an event that took place.
Wait, so the line of rocks was what they were pushing aside so the wagons could come through?
So the wagons could come through. And the record says that the slaves actually, I mean, the Egyptians suffered 10 plagues, and they were glad to let their slaves go after all that, especially when the Pharaoh's son died. And so when the Israelites said, look, give us your wagons, give us this, give us that, we need something to travel, we've been working for nothing for 200 years, we need now to take stuff with us, the Egyptians gladly gave it to them to get rid of them. And this included wagons, which meant that the little children and the old women and men could ride while the fit people could travel on foot. And these wagons, just like the old American wagons in the early days.
That's pretty amazing. So is there any record that land bridge was ever above water?
Well, there is not, except that on this one occasion when the land bridge, when the sea, according to the record, opened up on both sides, a wind blew from the east, it strongly opened it up, and then it dropped. It froze the water. In other words, you have a strong wind in the desert coming out of the Arabian desert. It blows on the water. It opens it up, separates it into two sides, leaves a sand bridge there dry, or rather, shall I say, with no water over it, and it freezes it so it stays in place while this event takes place.
Oh,
and then gradually thaws out so that after a few hours, as Pharaoh's army wakes up in the morning and sees his quarry has escaped, he gets his soldiers down. They all travel down onto the sand bridge. Now there's no longer a cold wind blowing, so the thawing out process is taking place, and the sand bridge is getting the ice particles which are joining the sand and making it like a pavement, like a paved road, are now starting to melt, And so his chariot wheels get stuck in the bottom. And then as the thawing continues, suddenly with a thunder and a roar and a crash, the sea comes down from both sides and obliterates the army.
That's amazing. Yeah.
And now
you use gauzing, which is to say you the electronics to determine whether there was metal, and you found the chariot wheels.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, Christopher, only 4 feet from me as I sit here in my office, I've got part of one of these wheels right here with me. The chariot wheel covered in dead coral. The coral actually is what preserved it over these several thousand years. And
yeah.
The coral preserved the iron inside. What I've got here is what my wife picked up. She, on her very first dive, she was the one of the member of the team who brought this up, and we've got it right here in my office.
Oh, that's really neat. What a great artifact. You also had experiences up in the, I think it was your first experience many years ago, up in the Amazon, and I've always been fascinated with Amazon stories. A few years ago, there was a guy named Gene Savoy who had a bunch of writings about a whole bunch of cities he discovered in the Amazon that were way back in the upper Amazon. Are you familiar with Gene Savoy?
Yes. Very interesting reading what he reports. Fascinating stuff.
So did you find some cities up in there also, or were there's natives protecting them where you couldn't get into them?
Well, I'll tell you what I did find. I found among the natives stories of their ancestors having lived in cities. Wherever I went, I have never found among these primitive tribes any evidence that their ancestors have come up from slime or monkeys or anything else. They all talk about their ancestors having lived in cities where the lights never went out at night, and in some cases where rooms would go up and down to give access to people like an elevator. They talk about these sort of things, and they've never been to Western civilization. And they say that earthquakes destroyed their cities.
Now, the earthquakes, yeah.
Earthquakes, yeah. And so the survivors went primitive, and this seems to be what anthropologists as well as archaeologists are finding worldwide, that the pattern is that mankind came down through disaster. He hasn't been rising up, which is rather interesting. And I actually wrote about a tribe in the Amazon in my book, Dead Man's Secrets. And I had a chapter there on ancient tunnel systems. And in connection with that, I got access to the report of a German investigator who was in Brazil in the Amazon, and he was complaining about the genocide that was going on where people supposedly associated with the Native Protection Society of the government were flying in helicopters and dropping poison sweets and lollies laced with arsenic and typhus and wiping out tribes so they could take their land and start using it. And
really?
One tribe in particular was the Yuga Mongolulu tribe. And I investigated this and wrote about them. A group of tribes, actually, that were related distantly and closely to, comprising about 30,000 people. They had a chief called Tutunga, and he suggested to everybody that they go underground to the ancient tunnel systems to protect themselves from these murderers that were coming in by helicopter. And this, of course, is the same reason why any traveller going overland today is subject to attack and possibly murder, but certainly captivity by this group and by other groups who fear what visitors might do to them. And this particular tribe had a city, their ancestors rather, had a city in which there were huge buildings, now covered with jungle, but a very sophisticated construction. And they went and discovered that there was a tunnel system that had an access to it underneath their own city, their ancestors' city. And this tunnel system went for hundreds of miles below the Amazon jungle. So they, as they investigated, they went underground and they found the remains of living quarters. And so the whole 30,000 people, and this happened in the mid-1970s, the whole 30,000 people among several tribes all went underground, and they're still living underground today.
Really? They're still living underground. Do they come out, or are they just living under there?
They come out to plant crops, and of course that's all very well disguised so that from the air people wouldn't know where they were, not too easily anyway. And what they did then was to break up their manpower, broke up a lot of these big buildings, big stone buildings, and made them look as though they were deserted, of course, which they were, because they were simply, they would be a giveaway if somebody came in to explore them, these ruins, then they might find the tunnel system. So that no one would start exploring in that area, they destroyed that city so it would not be something noticing, and then they could come in and out at will with less surveillance danger. Now, I had no idea that a little while later somebody was going to confirm what I had written about in my book. That's what I wrote about. And this man actually is a Canadian scientist. He's a good friend of mine now. He lives in British Columbia, and he signed up on my newsletter on my website, and he didn't even know I'd written about these people, nor that I knew about them. But he reported to me, he said, "Jonathan," he said, "I was some time ago recently with my prospecting team." Now, he's a very wealthy and very knowledgeable prospector. They're prospecting for precious minerals. They prospect up in the Arctic Circle, they prospect in jungles and so on. Uh-huh. And he said, my team and I were up there, we were down in the Amazon, and we were prospecting, and we were ambushed by this tribe. And he described the same tribe.
Wow.
And he said, they took me through the tunnel system to their city as a captive.
They took him through the tunnel system?
From where there were entrances further along in the jungle, and in one of those entrances they entered, and they took him with them, and they ended up after several days in this underground city below the ruins of the old city they'd destroyed.
What did they do for lighting underground?
Well, interesting, very interesting, Christopher. He said to me that as they approached, as they got closer to the city, suddenly the lights would come on. And as they departed, lights would go off. These were approaching lights approaching the city. And it appears that there is a perpetual lighting system in use underground, at least in that part of the tunnel system.
And some luminescence.
Yes, some luminescence. And it is activated by either movement or by heat. He wasn't sure, he didn't actually specify which, but other travellers I noticed have reported similar phenomenon of a greenish light that shines in some of these tunnels.
Well, I've heard over the years, because I've been always fascinated about the inner earth stories and of different tunnel systems that have a luminescence that leading into giant chambers and cities on the inner earth. Have you had any other experience with that?
Well, my wife and I have gone through a few places together, actually. I've had my own teams, but occasionally she comes with me. And in Turkey, we went into an underground system which contains, we have only visited one of the cities, but they say that there are something like a dozen underground cities in that part of Turkey. It's southwestern Turkey. And we went into one of them. We were escorted in by one of the local people. And the remains of this city goes down 13 stories deep into the ground. And these people lived in here. They babies were born, the babies went to school, they were nurtured, they got married, they died, all underground. And there's a good ventilation system even today. There was good water supply reticulated. They had a very sophisticated establishment there underground. The people have gone, but a lot of the remains are still there underground, and they can be visited by anyone who knows where to go.
Well, that's amazing. And you've also had experience with all kinds of finding all kinds of artifacts regarding and mummies regarding indication of ancient aliens.
We don't have evidence of ancient aliens, but we do have evidence of ancient people. Yes, lots of it. As a matter of fact, many of the stories that are attributed to aliens today can actually be explained by sophisticated technology of our own race. I've been up to Papua New Guinea, for example, and during the Second World War, the Papua New Guineans actually started worshipping the Americans who came from the sky.
Yeah.
They thought they were gods, and a cult developed which still exists among some of them today. It's very interesting. And this has happened in many parts of the world.
Well, that's interesting. Have you had any experience with, I know you've found different places, you found ancient technologies that were completely anomalous compared to, from where they were found and futuristic. And you've probably seen evidence of an ancient civilizations that were modern all over the world.
Oh yes, absolutely. For example, we mentioned the ever-burning lights before. These lights have been found in South America. The Spanish conquistadors back in the 1500s, they reported them, and that they've been reported as recently as our own time. You go over to West Irian Jaya, which is the eastern part of Indonesia, western part of Papua New Guinea, and a group of explorers were up there near Mount Wilhelmina some years ago, and as they came to some ancient ruins, they thought, oh, we'll stay here for the night before we go on further. And as they settled down for the night, they suddenly saw that it was becoming light around them as it got dark. And they looked up, and here were these pillars, about 20 feet tall, with globular, like big globular rocks on them that were luminescent. Huh. And these were glowing in the night. And there was a whole avenue of them where they had lain down and put in their sleeping bags. And this way, these guys went back to South Africa, where one or two of them had to attend a international town planning conference in Pretoria, and they gave an official report to all the attendees from around the world of this particular ever-burning light system that still exists today.
Have they ever gone back and analyzed what makes them work?
That particular site, I'm not sure of. I don't know of any others that have been able to be examined in our day. I remember that the daughter of the famous orator, what was his name, a Roman orator, she was buried, this was in the first century, and put in her sarcophagus, which was not opened until about the 1700s. And when it was opened, at her feet was still burning a light. And vandals, and it was seen by thousands of people, but vandals eventually destroyed it. And I don't know where any such lighting systems are that could be examined at the moment, except that one near Mount Wilhelmina in Papua New Guinea, in West Irian Jaya.
Yeah. Well, I remember reading about when you're in the Amazon, you says there was headhunters that would shrink heads to the size of an orange, and that's also New Guinea, isn't it?
Oh yes, that's been done up there as well.
So in other words, it's not real accessible without a lot of danger.
You can say that again. That's right. I before going down to the Amazon, I visited the USA for a month, visited some friends of mine up there, and I went to a police disposal store in San Francisco and bought myself a bulletproof vest, and I took that with me.
So it was a poison arrow-proof vest.
That's right. But well, so long as the arrow comes from the front, if it comes from the back, well, I didn't have one to cover me in the back.
Ooh, yeah. Well, I've always been interested in a lot of stuff that's going on, modern stuff now. With there's a internet show called Gaia TV where they have on Cosmic Disclosure, and they're going into the story of how all over the world on this Cosmic Disclosure series, and it's got David Wilcock and Corey Good, but they've been talking about a secret space program they've had. You know, in this series, and it's a weekly thing, you know, once a week, and they've been talking about how they've had a secret space program and a secret Stargate program, and they've had, there's been research, archaeological research all over the world, and they've discovered different Stargates, ancient ones, and some were real primitive, and some later versions, and they've back-engineered these, and they've had a Stargate program for 20 years. Did you have any record or experience or hearing about Stargate researching where they're excavating Stargates around the world?
No, actually, Christopher, I can't help you on that one because it's not been my line of research, and I prefer not to speculate. I wouldn't know any much more than you would on that particular aspect.
Yeah, I'm really fascinated with that, and I've been, from the sounds of it, the TV show, that, you know, and, well, it's actually internet TV, but from the sounds of it, that the popular movie series on TV called Stargate SGI has been a cover for the real thing.
often stories that are fictionalized tend to be that way, yes. They're based upon something that's going on or has gone on.
Could you share some other anomalous things that you found around the world that were futuristic, that were just completely out of place?
Well, yes. Up in the northern part of Russia, near the Ural Mountains, some technology has been found, which was found actually by gold miners digging down. And these artifacts were examined very, very, so very small, actually, that with the night, without sophisticated equipment, you couldn't really see what they were like, and they were sent down to, but they were seen to be of terrestrial technology, a man-made technology, and they were sent down to three universities, one in Moscow, one in Helsinki, and there was another one, I think the other one was in Leningrad. Now, these actually are spherical and spiral in size, and they're very, very small. They're a bit like our nanotechnology, so small, and yet they are real. They're not natural. They're man-made, made of metal, non-rusting metal. Hundreds of them have been found, and they look as though they were part of some circuitry or some kind of electronic device. We can't figure out today, with our knowledge, what else they could belong to, but some kind of electronic mechanism. And of course, if our civilization was destroyed and little pieces out of computers were found and so on, another civilization would be scratching their heads, wondering, what did this belong to? Where was it used? And that's what we're finding with this technology up in the Ural Mountain area of Russia.
And that was a gold mine. Down inside of a gold mine, they found this.
That's right. That's right.
So, any other indications of? I'm fascinated with these stories around the world. I've been kind of collecting them over the years. And regarding Atlantis or a pre-Diluvian civilization, some other things you may have found.
Oh, yes. We're finding quite a lot, actually, in that direction. And as a matter of fact, Christopher, this may not be general knowledge, but the present festival, the one that you wrote to me about in your email, which I received just before the broadcast, talking about Halloween. It may not be generally known that Halloween actually is originally began as a celebration of the day the Earth was destroyed in that cosmic disaster known as the Great Flood, where the pre-Diluvian world was destroyed. It's linked up with that. So your question sort of gets us into that again, doesn't it?
It does. Some record of it, that this was what the original Halloween celebration was about, kind of a way of dealing with the fears and the terrors of that time?
Yes. Actually, in the book of Genesis, in the Bible, it talks about the time, and in fact there's a ship's log recorded there, and a whole chapter of a ship's log, the events that occurred and what days they occurred on during the event. And it says that in the second month of the pre-Diluvian world, on the 17th day of the month, the Great Flood began. Now, that corresponds to, well, what happened after that flood was that the whole world celebrated it. The season of the year in which this event destroyed the human race was commemorated worldwide afterwards. And that season was the New Year Festival, which was observed at the disappearance of the constellation Pleiades at the end of October, early November. Now, the first month of the ancient year fell in October, not January as it does today. And the festival at this date was one of the most universal of all customs, and it was observed in connection with the memory of the dead. And the Aborigines of Australia, the savages of the Society Islands, the Hindus, the Irish, the Persians, the Celts, the Mexicans, the Egyptians, the Fijians, the French, the Peruvians, it doesn't matter where you go, they all had this celebration of what today we call Halloween. And it was known as the Day of the Dead. It commemorated the mass disappearance of most of the world's population. And this 17th day of the original pre-flood year was changed on the early Egyptian calendar to become their New Year's Day. They calculated their new year from that date that the flood had begun. And as a matter of fact, they placed an image of Osiris in a sacred boat and launched it into the sea to disappear from sight. That was in celebration of the flood having begun.
Is the reason that the Pleiades disappeared was because there was a pole shift, and so what was rising and setting, and I, from my understanding, even the spin of the Earth began spinning in the other direction, but it changed the calendar systems all over the world.
It changed it from a 360-day year to a 360-day year pre-flood to a 365 and a quarter day.
Yeah, I've read about that, and that this is recorded all over the world.
Yes, it is. Everywhere.
And didn't the sun used to rise in the west and set in the east, but that switched, or was that true also?
That was a temporary result of the, well, actually, that came about after the flood when there was a splitting of the one huge continent, and what was Australia was linked before Australia was formed. It was linked up to Asia, and all the continents were close together. But at the time of this great event, the Earth did tilt on its axis. That did change the direction at first, but then after the flood, the split was finalized because the crust of the Earth was still settling down after this event. And what happened was a very sudden separation of the continents, and so you could naturally not be facing the same direction if you were pushed to another part of the globe. And what was east could easily become west, and this is recorded it's recorded in the folklore and memory of some races.
Oh, that's really fascinating. So Halloween has deep in the core collective unconscious of humanity, there's a record there that was basically recognizing and honoring or, you know, the dead.
Yes, actually. The interesting thing was that the celebration is of the people who were not survivors. There was a celebration of those who were wiped out and who were warned to get ready, but they didn't. And today they're looked upon as the dead that we're talking about on Halloween, where people dress up in masks and get scared and so on. It was a scary time for those who were locked outside the survival vessel and tried to get in and couldn't get out. Boy, that was scary.
I can imagine. Their worst fears came upon them. It's like today talking about Planet X.
yes, that's right. And you know, another interesting thing, Jesus Christ, when he was on earth, he said that as it was in the days of Noah, so it shall be in the days when I return to earth. Most people are going to be terrified when they see me coming, and it'll be the same, it'll be probably worse than the time of the Great Flood.
I'm getting a lot of chatter regarding that from all kinds of different sources, and a lot of it I don't want to go there because I don't want to give it any energy, so to speak, and I don't want to make it a self-fulfilling prophecy with putting fear into the matrix. But we live in a world where you want to see the good and make it so, but it's like sometimes I hear about this Planet X like it's a Damocles sword hanging over the earth, and either we get our act together or this intelligently directed body out there that's come into our solar system. And I used to have a lot of people on the show that were on the AM Coast to Coast and would go into this. I remember Gordon Gian Amato, and he was like a real expert on it, and he went on to multiple times on Coast to Coast afterwards, my show. And we kind of stopped talking about it after we heard from this cosmic historian, who had his own radio talk show, and he talked to both of us about how it's intelligently directed, and it's like a representation of the collective unconscious of humanity, and basically the judgment we get is the judgment we give. So I mean, we both stopped talking about Planet X.
Well, this leads me to suggest that what you did suggest, and I concur with you, Christopher, that we need to look at the positive side of this. Although there will be people who will go through such an experience, and it's happened before, and it's going to happen. So we're no getting around that. But the best side of it is that there's going to be lots of survivors, people who actually get their act together and realize that they need to shapen up their lives and love God, love man, but let's get into getting out of our selfishness and thinking of others and thinking of our Creator. Let's get into the what needs to be done and prepare ourselves for the future. We have nothing to fear. The best is yet to come. I always like to say the best is yet to come.
Oh, I'm grateful for that message. Jonathan, that's a wonderful way to end the show. We're going to do a wrap now. I did want to reference people to go look at your website at www.beforeus.com. That's one word, beforeus.com. And more of your information, your book you have available, which has got a lot of fascinating tidbits in it. I'm so grateful to have you on the show today and finish with that wonderful message.
My pleasure, Christopher. Thank you for having me on with you today.
You're welcome. Blessings to you, and thanks to everyone for listening. Happy trails until we meet again, and keep the faith, see the good, and make it so. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to this presentation on Cosmic Love. I hope you have enjoyed receiving this as much as I have enjoyed giving it. There's a new relationship with all humanity that is maturing with the new synchronicity of instant, everywhere, interactive, net reality. Cosmic love is the heart of this synchronicity. Tools and processes that empower the wisdom of cosmic love is the purpose of the Worldwide Love Foundation. The family of man is now making a quantum leap into a new consciousness as never before in history. Our awareness as humankind is expanding, and the internet reflects that multidimensional expansion of consciousness into new realms of omniscience, omnipresence, and omnipotence in the power of cosmic love. This has huge implications. The more information we have, the greater the need to get it all in order. The more knowledge power we have, the greater the need for the wisdom of cosmic love. That should be common sense. And it's time to make common sense more common. If you agree that the American Revolution was huge for freedom and opportunity in the world, look what's happening to the whole world now. A new connection with cosmic love is positioning the golden rule, law, language for a golden age in our spirit, our minds, our hearts, and the soul of humanity. We're on the threshold of a global revolution that is awakening the angels of our better nature. Let's be honest and reason together. Cosmic love has always been the golden rule law language for every golden age in cosmic history. Some things don't change, only the ability of the human mind to grasp the full implications of the world in which we now live. That has changed with the internet, and like an adolescent who is not an adult yet, but not a child either, the internet is now installed, operational, and ready to take our personal and planetary consciousness to the next level. That would be cosmic love, and the foundation principles for this is the love model, a universal law language interface for net reality that represents the five-dimensional intelligence that can fulfill a global revolution in higher consciousness. Check it out for yourself. See how it works. Consider the role you can play and how you can benefit. The sooner you get the vision of this cosmic love thing, the sooner you can profit from a wholly new economy that will transform all our social networks with extraordinary abundance of everything held sacred by free people worldwide. There is a new intelligence that is defining and refining humanity's evolutionary ascent. The higher the intelligence of universal cosmic love, the greater the results. The gateway to higher consciousness is, in fact, the language of consciousness. The five-dimensional intelligence that cosmic love frames in form and frequency, as in frequently. Once you get it, how the Holy Spirit of love and action can heal our individual and collective conscience, it will become self-evident how cosmic love can nurture and culture the net reality that brings a Holy Spirit to the collective consciousness of humanity. Love heals all, always has, always will. The more cosmic and universal the vision of love, the greater the results. Welcome to the opportunity. It's time to link the light workers who are love makers. The internet now provides this opportunity for extraordinary synchronicity as will empower wisdom with cosmic love. Someone had to do it. Now you can. Network for the net worth of this new net reality. You have the vision now before you. What you do with it can change your world and the world at large. We are all co-creators in the cosmic scheme of cosmic love. The great spirit of great love is the great opportunity that genuine freedom gives all of us. Heaven knows that there is nothing more valuable than the vision of cosmic love that has found its time. Experience the Worldwide Love Foundation in your consciousness, being, and world. Care enough to share this vision of great opportunity. Step into the circle of global connection as you center and connect with the five-dimensional intelligence of cosmic love that provides the cultural DNA for a golden age on Earth. Miracles happen when cosmic love is conceived, believed, and achieved. You are that miracle when you become the cosmic love you want to see in the world. Own this vision as your own. Embrace the intrinsic virtue of cosmic love. Make the vow to do what you can because you can. claim the victory for all mankind aspiring to live as kind men. Here's to winning from the beginning of a global revolution that will finish worldwide with the great experiment and representative government gave humanity with the American Revolution. Heaven on earth is virtually in your hands. Do you want the keys to the kingdom? Are you ready to assemble the components to the capstone of cosmic love vision? Discover the five-dimensional intelligence that will empower your own virtually untapped gifts and talents. Consider how you can make a difference, if not the difference. It's your life, your world. Take command. Give cosmic love the chance that you want for all mankind. Now you can. See for yourself. Do it for cosmic love, and heaven knows cosmic love will bless your life far beyond this one. Sooner or later, what goes around comes around. You can call that good karma, or the justice of cosmic law, or just the blessings of cosmic love. It's the same thing. The abundant life is born in abundant love. The more cosmic that love, the more abundant is your life. Personally, I can't think of anything better to do, and I hope you feel the same way. So keep in touch with cosmic love. It only gets better as you pay attention. This is how cosmic love works. Pay attention because attention pays in ways that make cosmic love the new currency for global peace and prosperity. Your attention is your consciousness. The next economy for planetary civilization will pay attention to the value of virtue, the virtue of cosmic love. The family of man and our global village must be connected to this one virtue. We must pay attention to the first principles of higher consciousness if we are to transcend the old paradigms of scarcity consciousness that scarcity economics has created. This is the whole point of cosmic love. We won't heal our personal and planetary problems with the same consciousness that created the problems. The best hope for humanity is the charity of goodwill among mankind. This is the charity of cosmic love in action. This is the Holy Spirit of cosmic love in man that raises mankind with loving kindness. I hope you appreciate this message and share it with others. That may be just your circle of influence with family and friends, or it may be every news group or blog on the internet where light workers and enlightened netizens, global citizens, hang out. By the grace of cosmic love, enough good people will do enough soon enough to quickly turn the tide of global consciousness from the paradigm of scarcity to the paradigm of abundance that cosmic love cultures. May the quickening and awakening of consciousness begin with you and your own personal evolution in higher consciousness. Thanks again for listening to Cosmic Love.